back on Monday. Great shows over the weekend. Billy Shears, Rick Goodner, Rick Smith. And we're hoping to develop more programming for the weekend as well. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, to Ben Birch, John Fox, Peter Godbold, all the moderators, all the bloggers, the news ninjas, and thanks most of all to you for sharing your time with us every evening, all of us here on the Horn. We're honored and we're humbled by your company. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 183 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively found only here on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network, brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch, the good people over at Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net. Stop by crmw.net. Have a look. See for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing and has done to the state of West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your busy day. Today is Friday, September the 19th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Friday night in September 1908, you are listening to a live show, and it is Conversation Radio. You're welcome to phone in and participate. There's several ways to participate. I'll tell you all about those in a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and over at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you're going to find links to all of the guests who have been with us on past shows. You'll find links to the audio archives from the past shows as well. You'll also find links there to the chat room, which is active, and I'm in the chat room. It's one of the ways you can participate with the show. Just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com, click on the chat link, choose yourself a chat name, and you're immediately in. And it's one of the best animated chat rooms on the planet. You're just bound to love it. Great place to be. You'll also find over at strictlyconfidentialradio.com a link to the MySpace page for the show, and there are links there to help you locate the music. You'll also find there the Head-On Radio Network main site. That's headonradionetwork.com. And over at headonradionetwork.com, you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head-On Radio Network, of which I am a small part. You'll find there at headonradionetwork.com a PayPal button, and it will make it easier for you to keep the shows and the fans turning and the packets streaming and all the things that have to happen to do progressive radio. Makes it easier for you to join in and support the Head On Radio Network. Now, there are several ways to participate. Toll-free, if you'd like to call that way, we'd love to hear from you. That's 877 the number 4, Head-On, that translates into 877-443-2366, toll-free. Unlimited long distance, well, yes, you could use that. That's 304-658-3333. Again, that's 304-658-3333. Both of those lines bring it to the studio in West Virginia, and Agnes or Bob will grab the phone. Email is arriving to peter@petergodbold.com this evening. My email client is still not on speaking terms with the Head On Radio Network mail server, so hopefully get that resolved this weekend. So this evening, mail will arrive to Peter at petergodbold.com. That's G-O-D-B-O-L-D. So there are three ways to participate: chat room, long distance, or toll-free long distance, or any number of ways. We're glad to have you here with us this evening on the Head On Radio Network. Got some stories for you this evening I'm going to tell. Got some great tracks to play for you. And we have the Paradise Dance Hall, the last section of the show, which is this evening the world's most dangerous yet somehow lovable DJ, Mr. Larry Sanders, from over at Morningstar Melody. Wonderful track there. It's always these days, there is so much going on that you can throw a dart in any direction and hit a story that should be told on this network. And I know we all do our best to cover them all, but sometimes it's just overwhelming. There's so many things to be said. I know I haven't helped that. I've been missing in action for a few days, but it's good to be back. It is good to be back amongst the packets and waving to them as we fly by each other on the internet. Let's start with disenfranchisement. Long word. Disenfranchisement means you lost your right to vote. Let's start with Alabama. This is a subject near and dear to my heart, disenfranchisement. We'll go through several states this evening. Let's start with Alabama. Well, in Alabama, inmate voter registration efforts have been halted by the Alabama Republican Party. Now, why is this important, you ask? Well, so many people are disenfranchised because of having been in jail or having committed a felony. Everything varies from state to state. You lose your right to vote. By and large, these people are not always Republicans. You see, the Republicans usually end up in the Club Med, the prisons that are Club Med, the tennis courts, et cetera, often. Poor people or vote democratically, and they don't have the money for bail, any number of reasons. And it's just another way that the Republican Party is trying to suppress the vote. The Republican Party wins if there's voter registration there and people turn out to vote. It is in their best interest to keep the number of voters down because they are outnumbered, even though they crow and walk up and down the walk crowing that they are the base of America. They are the majority of the America. They are landslide victories. It's all a huge hoax. So, in any case, in Alabama, a Reverend Kenneth Glasgow. Now, Kenneth led an effort to register inmates so that they could cast absentee ballot votes while in jail. Now, you see, many people are being held in jail who are not convicted with a crime. They just don't have the money for bail. They haven't been to court. They haven't been convicted one way or the other. You see, in this country, at least supposed to be, last time I checked, innocent until proven guilty. So, in fact, there are many people who are held in jails who still have every right to vote. They just don't have the money for bail. In any case, there are other reasons, too. I'll get into that in just a moment. But in any case, this Kenneth Glasgow has been under pressure from the Alabama Republican Party to cease and desist. An email, can you believe this? An email from the state representative Mike Hubbard, who's a chairman of the Republican Party, complained to the corrections commissioner Richard Allen that the party supports the idea of registering to vote, but not those who are incarcerated. A plain and simple statement that violates your civil rights. If you still have your right to vote and you're incarcerated, the Republican Party has no business saying no. And they support people voting, they support registration, but not those who are incarcerated. Why? Because they would not vote Republican. Now, the letter was received by corrections commissioner from the state representative Mike Hubbard, who's the chairman of the Republican Party there. A letter was received after the Associated Press and various other media outlets did stories on Glasgow and talked about his huge success in registering 80 inmates in 2 days, and he had goals to register hundreds more before the voting deadline. Glasgow said, I quote, I think they're much more worried about me being a Democrat than anything else, said Glasgow. Glasgow also says the chairman of the Republican Party and the chairman of the Democratic Party can go in there with me and monitor it to make sure it's nonpartisan. I don't try to influence them which way to register. Well, there's no need for that, Reverend Glasgow, because they realize you're not being partisan and trying to make people sign up one way or the other. They know that the vast majority are going to register Democratic, and the vast majority is going to vote against your withered Republican arse. Now, there is another reason, at least in the state of Alabama, that people should be able to vote. People, of course, I've already talked about the ones who are charged with the crime but have not yet been to court, therefore guilty until proven innocent. Alabama law prohibits felons, and this is if you have been convicted, if you've been convicted of crimes of moral turpitude. Turpitude's not a word you hear every day. Crimes of moral turpitude. Now, you're prevented from voting unless you had your rights restored by the governor, and of course the governor does not truck with people who have committed crimes of moral turpitude. Now, of course, the Alabama Constitution doesn't define a crime of moral turpitude, so court opinions vary. The general opinion of the court is that crimes of moral turpitude include murder, robbery, rape, and certain other offenses. Could those certain other offenses be drag queens who put their makeup on badly? Or transsexuals who are having to turn tricks because they can't find employment? It's difficult for transsexuals, transgendered, to find employment, you know. That's why so many of them end up being sex workers. Anyway, a clear legal definition of crimes of moral turpitude wouldn't stop the debate, but it would clear up the gray areas. Now, there's a newspaper in Alabama, the Planton Advisor, said that about the gray areas. There's another editorial published by the Anniston Star, an Alabama newspaper, in support of voter registration. It said it only makes sense for states to implement programs that will help released felons become productive, lawful residents, and who will steer away from the very activities that put them behind bars in the first place. One of the ways to do that is to make them feel included in society, and having a right to vote is one of those ways. A Times Daily editorial on the issue opposed Glasgow's efforts to register inmates, and they say time in prison means a loss of personal freedoms. Personal freedoms, all but the basic right to humane treatment. Of course, that's not in the law, but it certainly is in the Times Daily, so it must be true. Allowing inmates to vote, they say, is simply an anathema to serving time for committing crimes. Allowing felons to vote inside prison walls contradicts the very nature of being punished for a crime. Do you hear the Republican ring in there, the little Republican tone? Contradicts the very nature. Because, of course, Republicans are all under the hand of God and live and breathe nature every day. And they managed to actually combine the words nature and punishment in the same sentence. You don't get that awful, you know, very often. Allowing felons to vote inside prison walls contradicts the very nature of being punished for a crime. See, once you've committed a crime, you're forever tainted. Kicked to the side. In fact, you'll see, whenever this thing about voter registration for people who have been convicted of a crime and have done their time or paid their dues and paid their debt to society, you'll often see in letters to the editor about that they should never be allowed. These people, a lot of these people claim to be Christians. There is not a trace of Christianity in it. There is no helping your brother who has fallen by the wayside back up. There's no tradition of forgiveness. These are hard-arsed people, nasty people. And the times daily certainly demonstrates that. Bob in the production chat points out that in Alabama the Times Daily is called the Tricycle Daily. I love it. Republicans running around in tricycles. Disturbing. Let's go to Mississippi. Why? We're just going to do it alphabetically. Why should we stop Alabama? Let's head right on over to Mississippi. The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Mississippi, filed a federal lawsuit last week challenging the state's denial of voting rights to citizens with felony convictions. The Mississippi Constitution allows individuals with felony offenses to vote for president and vice president, but election administrators in Mississippi are denying that right in practice. This is from a report from the Hudson Valley Press. The suit from the ACLU asks that citizens with felony records be allowed to register to vote by the October deadline. With the presidential election less than 2 months away, Mississippi is denying thousands of citizens their fundamental right to vote, and reread that, thousands of Democrats their fundamental right to vote. You know, Republicans do this. We wonder why sometimes they take action that will just disenfranchise 100 or 200, like that's going to help. But when you do it nationally, when you do it in every state in the union, you win elections. Every 200 helps. Now, the staff council at the ACLU, their voting rights project, says that by refusing to allow eligible citizens to register and vote for the highest office in the land, Mississippi election officials are undermining the integrity of the state's election system. Exactly true. And they're degrading our country's democratic principles. Exactly true. Democrat principles. The ACLU says it will not sit back and let election supervisors continue to violate state and federal law over Mississippi. And according to Mississippi's Constitution, people with certain felony convictions are allowed to vote for president and vice president, but not for other political offices. Go figure. I'm sure it made sense in Mississippi at the time when they wrote that down. Because the state's voter registration application does not allow all prospective voters to register for presidential and vice presidential elections only, many voters are being disqualified because the form only lets you register for all races, but the law says you can only vote, so there's no form for you to fill out. That's you see the catch 22. Very familiar territory for us in progressive blogs and progressive media and the world's most fabulous progressive radio network, the Head Auto Radio Network. The ACLU is representing a fellow named Jerry Young, and also Christy Colley. They're two Mississippi residents who've been convicted of felonies in the past and cannot vote due to the flawed administration of the state's election laws. Flawed by design, my friend, and the ACLU knows it. Now, Christy Bennett, who's one of the ACLU staff attorneys, wrote a commentary on the suit in the Jackson Free Press. It is obvious that the framers of our state constitution recognize the importance of allowing all citizens to vote for the highest leaders of this country. And we must continue to fight for this fundamental right today, she wrote. Mississippi election officials are undermining the integrity of the state's election system and degrading the country's democratic principles. By filing this lawsuit, we hope that all Mississippians with felony convictions will have the opportunity to register to vote. Let's see. Not quite alphabetical, but we'll move on to South Carolina. Move on to South Carolina here. Local election officials didn't make the grade on the voting restoration survey put out by the ACLU. Now, it's been reported that they flunked it miserably. The officials didn't know all the details about when individuals with felony officials regained their right to vote in South Carolina. Maybe it's because they were not trained. The ACLU and South Carolina Progressive Network released the results of the statewide survey and called for changes in state voting laws and education and notification of vote restoration, meaning you actually have to contact the miserable piece of slime who should be forever burning in the flames of hell. That's all, that has, you know, that's, you know, you guys know I go to church on Sunday, but that's one thing that always has annoyed me, this the constant burning flames of hell and the we're not going to forgive. You know, it's just antithetical. It just doesn't compute. Does not compute. Non sequitur. In the case, currently, state laws over in South Carolina allow individuals to vote once they've served their sentence, including probation and parole. And survey questions included whether people with misdemeanor convictions and those with out-of-state felony convictions could vote, and 48% of the officials statewide answered incorrectly, according to a book called Ex-Felons Voting Rights that they have not read. The history in South Carolina of preventing people from voting is a long history. We're still living that history, the old Jim Crow laws. This is said by the director of the South Carolina Progressive Network. People in the streets don't understand the rules. They go to their election commission, and they're going to get wrong information. The survey has proved that. When we asked whoever answered the phone at the elections commissions to simulate the experience of a regular caller who might call in. Oklahoma. ACLU survey of election boards in Oklahoma's 77 counties found that 17 counties provided erroneous information on the state's re-enfranchisement policy. One county said a convicted felon was never eligible to vote again. It's personal preference, I'm sure. In actuality, individuals in Oklahoma with felony convictions may vote once they've completed their sentence, paid their debt to society, and they should have every reason to vote, every right to vote. But they're scared of that. You can't have the people who've been through the system voting, and now can you? That will never do. That's part of the problem of the hugely disproportionate racial situations that we have in the prisons and in the jails. In any case, State Rep. Mike Shelton of Oklahoma plans to file a notification bill requiring the state to inform those of their rights to vote upon release. Tennessee. Now, Tennessee, they're pretty excited over there. The Tennessee Coordinator of Elections reported a significant increase in the number of individuals with felony records seeking to have their rights restored. Thank you, Brother Obama. Which is not to say that they're all black, but it is to say thank you, Brother Obama, for bringing back our missing brethren into this system, or for at least attracting them. And the Republicans definitely fighting them off at every turn. Now, there's a fellow named Cliff Ingram. The process for Cliff Ingram, he had to complete a certificate of restoration form at the County Election Commission, and he had to take it to the Probation and Parole Office to get the required signatures and return it to the Election Commission for verification. I did what they told me to do, said Ingram, who had been putting off voting restoration process after receiving probation for a nonviolent offense in 2006. So in the past, voting there to get your right to vote back, you had to go to a lawyer, you had to go to court. And then there are various dates, if he did it before this date, if he did it after this date. Just typical roadblock confusion. In any case, there's an additional rule today. Today, however, individuals must also be current in child support obligations. I'm all for child support, all for responsibility. But, of course, that also means that if you're poor, you might not be able to make all those child support obligations. Still doesn't mean you shouldn't vote. Might need to be rearrested, I don't know, but still doesn't mean you shouldn't vote. In Florida, which is, of course, near and dear to my heart, there's a statewide ad campaign that targets individuals with felony offenses. Our nation's future is at stake. Your voice shouldn't be silenced by your past. The state campaign ads pushed by the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition and the American Civil Liberty Union of Florida. The organizations together launched a voter registration campaign this week targeting individuals with felony convictions whose rights have been restored. There's not that many of them, I'd like to point out. The ads are displayed in minority communities across the state in English and Spanish, which is probably why I haven't seen them. I live in a minority community, but it's po-white people on the dirt road. In any case, according to CBS down there, the groups have also published an online database displaying the civil rights status of those with felony convictions at restorerights.org. Gee, I wonder why I didn't know about that until today. It's not like the state doesn't have my mailing address. It's not like I've moved since all that crap went down. Lord have mercy. Anyway, smaller grassroots efforts are also helping eligible voters to register before the October 6th deadline, including there's a Marion County Voters Registration Coalition holding a workshop Saturday. Now, I thought it was already too late to register, but apparently it isn't. And volunteers are going to be on hand to help fill out the paperwork. Now, it says people around the country have the mistaken impression that Florida's felon disenfranchisement crisis has been adequately addressed by the governor, which is what the state of Florida is putting out to the press, but it's just not true. So says this article, so says I, so says Howard Simon, who's the executive director of the ACLU of Florida. The state has no program to notify people of their eligibility, and consequently few have registered to vote, and that's why we've had to step in and launch a program that should have been conducted by Florida officials last year. I should point out that last year the state of Florida had a website where you could go if you were convicted of a felony and paid your dues. You could go in and put in your name and your number and your address and all that sort of thing, and they would automatically run it through the system, supposedly, and restore your right to vote. No big deal. No muss, no fuss. Sunshine laws, drive-through banking, you know, easy stuff. Never heard a word from them, but as of today, I've heard about restorerights.org, where you can just go there and put in your name and your date of birth, and it'll tell you right away if your rights have been restored. Well, I did that, and they're not. Anybody surprised? Yep. Florida's telling everybody it's come on down, Mickey Mouse and Sunshine. It just ain't right in Florida. In Virginia, there's some success, an increase in vote registration. According to the Deputy Secretary of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the governor has restored rights to 2,305 individuals' nonviolent offenses from the time he took office in January 2006. Well, that may be pretty good for an individual who's restoring rights, but, you know, you need to automate that just a little bit. I think there's a hell of a lot, if you keep doing it at this rate, you know, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people. You know, that's just not good, 2,305 individuals since 2006. The state claims that's more than 32%. An increase from the 1,736 nonviolent felons who had their rights restored in January 2002 to 2004, leading up to 2004, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, there's all sorts of dates and commas to confuse a person. Now, the increase is attributed to organizations and churches, not the government, who have taken it to residents' homes and registration cards, educated citizens with felony convictions about the pardons process, which is still done manually in an effort to regain their right to vote. In Virginia, a nonviolent offender must wait 3 years after the expiration of his or her probation. So it's like a little more probation on top of your probation before applying to have your rights restored. And those charged with violent offenses must wait 5 years, and all fines and court restitution must be paid. Here again, there's a means test, financial test. And many people who are poor will not have been able to pay all their fines, even if 5 years have passed. It sometimes takes a long time to pay thousands of dollars in court fines and restitution. Not that restitution shouldn't be paid, but it should not be what has restitution got to do where you're trying to join society and a right to vote. In any case, if you'd like to find out more about that, you should go to the sentencingproject.org. A great organization. At least I believe it's .org. I'm almost positive. Anyway, you can tell me in chat if sentencingproject.org doesn't pull it up. And I'll let everybody know. Thank goodness for the chat room. Where are we? We're about 9:30. Let me tell you a couple of little log, they're just precious log closet Republican stories. My, oh my. Just made me all warm and cuddly to hear the voices. They're actual little voices by the log closets. Republicans, it's a group called Republicans Against Eight. This is over in California, and Republicans Against Eight was founded by the log closet Republicans. Republicans Against Eight is fighting the new law that's been put up by the fundies to be voted on in November, which, by the way, is to everyone's counting and surveying. It looks like it's falling flat on its face, but nonetheless, the log closet Republicans have a coalition against that law passing. By the way, if you don't know, the log closet Republicans were founded back in 1978 when they were all sniffing around the White House wanting to sniff Ronald Reagan's drawers. And they started sniffing Reagan's drawers to fight Proposition 6, which is called the Briggs Amendment. And that would have banned gay and lesbian teachers from teaching in public schools. So, blah, blah, blah. Here, let's talk. Let's just listen to some of the other clips. There's three. They're all very short. But it's the first character. This is Log Closet 1. This guy is standing when he does his little talk. He's one of these. You ever seen people that when they're standing, they rock back and forth on their feet, back and forth like a 4-year-old? You know, which is about the mental capacity of some of them. Anyway, this guy is rocking back on his feet while telling you this little story. Bob, please roll Log Closet 1.
I think our party's tradition is one of expanding rights, not eliminating them. Many of the people that I've come across in the Republican Party who are gay and lesbian are some of the most loyal members of our party. And what Proposition 8 would do would be to take away basic rights that they now have in California. And I think it would be a travesty for some of our most loyal party members who share in our dedication to the basic values of the Republican Party to have their rights taken away.
As our friend Wayne Benson said last night, report from him, the only way to fix the Republican Party is to disassemble. Vote them out in such staggering numbers that they have to redesign the party and get the slime out and the people who raise money on our backs. Can't be fixed. It has to be rebuilt. The best thing the log closet could do for the Republican Party is to vote Democratic and help put the Republican Party out of its misery such that it can be rebuilt in a recognizable format, which in fact does do some of the things that he mentioned early in his rocking back and forth childlike speech. Limiting government, staying out of people's personal affairs, et cetera, et cetera. But that party does not exist anymore. That party was hijacked long ago, and if you're a Republican who still believes that party exists, you are sadly mistaken, my friend. That party left the boat a long time ago. The second clip is Log Closet Republican 2. Now, this fellow is also rocking back and forth. It seems to be a Republican Log Closet thing, except he's sitting in a chair, but he sort of rocks back and forth in his chair when he gives his little 30-second take on it. Roll it, Bob, number 2.
A vote for Proposition 8, I believe, goes against true Republican values. allowing government to get too involved in our lives. I'm personally voting no on 8 because I believe that people should be able to marry who they want to marry and to love who they want to love without the government getting involved and intruding in their lives. That, to me, supports true Republican values.
Honey, your true Republican values. Oh, the dingoes ate your true Republican values. Your party no longer exists. Put it out of its misery, please. From the ashes, will rise the phoenix. From the ashes of the Republican Party might rise something good. Unbelievable. And the third log closet Republican, now this guy is a tough businessman. He's sitting in a darker room. He's got one of them butch beards, you know. He's a hard ass. Right. And he's all business. How it's going to hurt his business. It's all about business. Lord have mercy. These people all fell from the same turnip truck. Bob, roll number 3.
Proposition 8 is bad for business. It'll kill business on new business opportunities in California for businesses large and small. The current environment allows you to reduce your human relations and personnel administration costs. And finally, it sends a horrible message that all Californians aren't treated equally, which creates problems for businesses trying to recruit and retain qualified workers in California.
How typical was that? It's all the balance sheet. Reduce your costs. Oh, Lord have mercy. There's some people that are truly blinded. I have yet to be able to wrap my head around it. You know, we did a story a long time ago. Good while back, I don't even remember who did it. You know, all the hosts sort of blur together after a while. If I heard it on Bob's show or I did it, who knows where it came from. Maybe it was on John's show. But in any case, it was a show about a study of little teeny Republicans before anybody knew they were Republicans, starting from, like, elementary school or even earlier than that, kindergarten, and their behavior and how they acted with the teachers constantly whining, and Johnny stole my crayon, and there was always some crisis that they felt threatened. And anyway, those people just 9 times out of 10 just grew up to be Republican, always wanting to control. And in any case, I was looking around the headonradionetwork.com site today, and an article just blew me away. It's apparently from the Huffington Post, and I don't know who posted it on our site, but it's linked back to the Huffington, and it's a study. I just was for it. It's almost a continuation of the story of the kindergartens. There's no arguing with conservatives. It says no seriously scientific studies prove it. No seriously scientific studies prove it. There's no arguing with Republicans. It's a new study that's out of Yale University that confirms what liberals have been long saying, that offering a reality-based rebuttal to conservative lies only makes conservatives cling to the lies even harder. Now, if you're a conservative and you're listening, we're not saying you're liars. We're saying your party is ed up with them. It is the father of lies. In essence, it says... schooling conservatives, a study from Yale, says that schooling conservatives makes them more stupid. This is a from a Washington Post article in the study. It came out, I guess, on the 17th. Political scientists have provided two groups of volunteers with the Bush administration's. They provided them with the Bush administration's pre-war claims that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Now, one group was given a reputation. It was a comprehensive 2004 report that concluded that Iraq did not have any weapons of mass destruction before the United States invaded in 2003. Now, 34% of the conservatives told only about the Bush administration's claims, thought Iraq had hidden or destroyed the weapons before the U.S. invasion, 34%. But when you gave them the rebuttal, the other group, 64% of the conservatives who heard both claims and the refutation that Iraq didn't really have the weapons, this is a comprehensive rebuttal. In any case, they thought, it was 64 of them firmly believed that Iraq did have the weapons. And in other words, refuting it with a reality-based argument makes the misinformation worse. And it's called the backfire effect. I thought it was fascinating. A similar backfire effect was observed when they were told, a group of conservatives were told about this control study at Yale, a Bush administration. The conservatives were told about the Bush administration assertions that tax cuts increased federal revenue. Now, one group was offered a refutation, a rebuttal, an argument by a prominent, prominent economist that included current and former Bush administration officials to say that wasn't true, that, in fact, tax cuts increase federal revenue. They're demonstrating that wasn't true. Now, about 35% of the conservatives told about the Bush claim believed it. But when you gave them the rebuttal, 67% of those, you know, they believe that, they insisted that that tax cuts increase revenue. And fascinating story. So the paper is approaching publication. Talks about several people. Says that Republicans suggest that Republicans may be especially prone to the backfire effect because conservatives may have more rigid views than liberals. Upon hearing a refutation, conservatives might, quote, argue back against the refutation in their minds, and by going through that process, they strengthen their belief in the original misinformation. They tried to repeat the study, looking for the same backfire effect when liberals were given misinformation and a refutation about the Bush administration's stance on stem cell research, but there was no backfire effect. You know, Lord have mercy. Anyway, I'm going to do some stories in a little while about what's going on in California and in Arizona, at least I'm going to try to, regarding marriage amendments and the Latter-day Saints who are practically funding you'd just be amazed what's coming out of the Latter-day Saints. There's three ways to get money out of the Latter-day Saints. One is to donate to a Mormon who's going to be president. That's one way to get money out of the Mormons. The other way is tithing, and the other way is to oppose gay marriage. That seems to be the three best ways to get money out of the Latter-day Saints. In any case, before we do that, I've been rambling on for a while. I'll pick a little track and we can take a break, and we'll be back pretty soon. So again, this is Peter Godbold. The show you're listening to is Strictly Confidential, LGBT Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back after a Ashford and Simpson. Roll it, Bob. And there you have it, the original 12-inch dance floor mix of Found a Cure by Ashford and Simpson. That's not remixed by anyone we know. That's the original 12-inch dance version that was played in the clubs. Lord, I would have killed to have had a copy of that back in the day. Always loved that song. Heard it played once in a club in Portland. Someone had the 12-inch of it, but after that, I just couldn't find it in the record stores, couldn't find it anywhere. Anyway, that was the original 12-inch of Found a Cure Right Away. Great track. Boy, I was tripping there for a second. Let's see. Let's talk about the Moormans for a moment, as I said just before that wonderful 12-inch single played. There are three ways to get the Latter-day Saints to open up their pocketbooks: a Mormon presidential candidate, tithing, and gay marriage. Now, church members, mostly from California, have made individual donations close to $5 million in support of Proposition 8, which is to have an amendment of the California Constitution to say that marriage is between a man and a woman. Now, that was counting only donations of more than $1,000, according to one website. The California church authorities from the Latter-day Saints read a statement from Salt Lake City, a command from the top, from on high, that all church members, I tell you, all church members must do all they can to support the constitutional amendment. And that has resulted in but Mormons always do what they're told to do. It's resulted in mass donations. Who runs the Mormons 4-8, Nadine says that, Mormons for 8. And I suspect that when this is done, probably 80% of the money from individuals to support Proposition 8 will be from Mormons. Imagine that, an individual religion. In any case, so far the numbers show it's closer to 30%, but many areas have yet to report all of these small donors. And figuring out who's a member of the Latter-day Saints Church has been a sort of patchwork. Some names are well known, and others have been found through blogs and neighbors. Even the donors themselves will sometimes say they're part of the Latter-day Saints. Numbers show there have also been 25,000 volunteers going door to door in California, I tell you, each weekend. No doubt those boys in the white shirts and the black ties and the bicycles going door to door, I tell you, to tell the folks about their point of view. And a good portion of it, including volunteers and money, is coming from the Latter-day Saints. Now, is a word perfect? Not all Mormons. To give you the word perfect founder, I think I ranted about that the other week. Word perfect, the $800 word processing program that comes up with a little screen. Is the founder Bruce Bastian said he was going to donate $1 million to fight Proposition 8. In fact, we did the story about that a while back. The one thing I learned as a Mormon that preaching costs money, and the Mormons are going to raise a lot of money, he says, to support Proposition 8. Now, there's also this particular. Sometimes I have more than one article that covers the same story. Sometimes it's try to pull from more than one. This one pretty much says the same thing. In any case, the Arizona Daily Star. The Mormons are also there fighting for Proposition 102. You see, in Arizona, Proposition 102 is to put a constitutional amendment. We don't hear about that very often. Bob points out in production that the American Family Association gave $500,000 to defeat marriage. Also, that's that tax-free, sitting in the bank earning an interest kind of donation. The Arizona Daily Star has pointed out that it's a mostly Mormon-backed attempt to rectify what it calls polygamy in the eyes of voters, whatever that means. The opposition's argument against the ballot rests on convincing voters that Mormons and other religious groups are seeking to impose their views on people. But in any case, the money in Arizona is, for the most part, coming from the Mormon Church. The Mormon Church is working very, very hard to convince the public that they are mainstream, you see, and what better way to do it than to beat the hell out of the LGBT community? What could be more mainstream than keeping the fags in their place? Arizonans, quote here from Arizona, I don't think Arizonans are interested in having the Mormon religion dictate public policy. They found out who the donors were by Googling donor names along with LDS or Mormon, and which is a very difficult process. You can spend a lot of time Googling that many names with the word LDS or Mormon with it. So the Mormons are also heavily involved in Arizona and also in California. As I say, there's nothing to rattle a Mormon more than... By the way, there was a story we did a while back where the Mormon leadership was going to meet with an LGBT group. What was it? Equality Utah, perhaps? Something like that. But they canceled it. They canceled it, said we're not going to do it. Bob points out to me in production the figures are changing quickly, but the opposition to marriage folks in California now are running 17% behind pro-gay marriage in the polls. That seems to be going in the right direction. Every day I hear that the lead has gone further in California. And that's a good thing. I'm also told that in Florida, it's close, but let's not put the amendment on the Florida Constitution group, the man and a woman amendment, protect marriage, they like to call it. That is running ahead of the people who want it on who want the constitutional amendment in Florida. So that's going well, but it is way too close to call. Way too close to call. Also, a Mormon gave $1 million to overturn the California law. His name is Bruce Bastian, and he's the word perfect guy. $1 million, imagine that. He says the Latter-day Saints Church has no business sticking their nose into something that's a legal matter and not a religious matter. Here we go. Field polls find that gay marriage ban trails by 17 points. Just 38% of likely voters in California back Proposition 8, while 55% say they will vote against the November 4th ballot measure, according to field polls in July. And this is a good thing. The reading of it is that it will eliminate the right of same-sex couples to marry, which is in fact true since the Supreme Court granted it. They've rewritten the vote. You have to pull the lever on eliminate the right of same-sex couples to marry, which is exactly what it is. It seems to be fairly much stuck that no matter how you look at it, it's always 38% of the voters say they intend to vote for the measure, but the ones who are going to vote against it are fluctuating, I think primarily because of the undecideds. But the undecided seem to be coming down on the side of reason, which is a good thing. Let's see what we'll do. Getting close to the top of the hour. Okay. Take a little top of the hour break and sort through some of these facts, and we'll be back soon. Now, if you want to participate, wish you would. Don't bite, at least not hard. The toll-free line is 877. The number 4 head-on translates into 877-443-2366. And if you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. Email rise to Peter at petergodbold.com. And I did get an email from a couple of listeners who appreciated the The dingoes ate your party, regarding the Republican Party. Thank you, listeners. And so anyway, we'll head out to a top of the hour break. We'll be right back. This is Peter, Strictly Confidential.
Oh, you're Stanley's sister.
Yes. Please come in.
I'm so glad you're here, Mrs. Miss Timberlake.
I'll take your bag.
Thank you. How is she?
A little quieter now.
Poor dear, she was almost out of her mind.
What if...
Peter. His brother came down this morning. He's making all the arrangements. I suppose you're taking Stanley back home.
She wants to come.
I think she ought to get out of this house. I've been doing some shopping for her. I had to go to 6 places to find a decent black hat. All her hats are so gay, you know. Just like poor Stanley.
Oh, was she gay? I was afraid she'd been unhappy.
Well, she had to keep up, didn't she?
Yes, I suppose she did.
I don't think she's asleep. We'll go in and see.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And yes, indeed, I are back, riding across the country on a horse named the Head On Radio Network. It's good to be with you. The line is 877, the number 4, Head On. Translates to 877-443-2366, unlimited long distance. Why, sure. 304-658-3333, chat room. Stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the chat link. Choose a chat name, and you're there. Mail this evening is arriving to Peter at petergodbold.com. I came across a deliciously catty and sarcastic, very short little story today. Commenting on John McCain, I just couldn't resist it. Quotes John McCain just earlier this year. Evil must be defeated, he said. And then just after that, 1 month later, he said, enough is enough. We're going to put an end to greed. No more greed. The article points out that it is inspiring to know that John McCain has a plan to end greed. And the writer hopes that it doesn't distract him from his mission to defeat evil. And either way, has to kick the crap out of whatever Barack Obama's got on the docket with his empty words and his pie-in-the-sky promises. America's choice is clear. Barack Obama is a messianic egomaniac who thinks he's like our savior or something. Or we could choose John McCain, who will defeat evil and put an end to greed. John McCain will only take on special interests and Washington insiders. He will only do that. He'll fundamentally change and alter human nature. And he won't even raise taxes while he's doing it. He'll lead us to a sort of martial nirvana where all of the other emotions are replaced by patriotism. And he will turn the United States into a shining, selfless, bipartisan cross between heaven and Sparta. Evil must be defeated. Enough is enough. We're going to put an end to greed. The article points out also that Reverend Wright had walked around saying we're going to put an end to greed, people would have commented loudly. But John McCain can do that. Enough is enough. We're going to put an end to greed. Not as long as the Republican Party exists in its current form. And for you who remain Republican, I'm sorry, but the dingo ate your party. It no longer exists in the form of your father's. Let's see. And in the who would have thunk it, former U.S. Representative Mark Foley is not going to face charges after the investigation of his hot messages to the underage congressional pages. Now, two federal law enforcement officials told the American press that on Thursday. The officials spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the case. But the investigation is supposed to be announced Friday. They say neither state, this would be Florida, neither state nor federal charges were expected, although the FBI investigation isn't completely closed yet. Now, if you remember, Foley was the one in 2006. He sent the hot text messages to the hot pages, trying to get them to have sex with him. And he used to hang out in a club there in Washington, D.C. He's been under investigation by the FDLE, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the FBI, ever since. He resigned, of course, and shortly after he resigned, he announced that he was gay. Now, Foley said, I'm gay, and I was molested by a priest as a teenage altar boy. This is, of course, what made him gay. It's, you know, never a Republican taking responsibility for his own behavior. The dingoes did it, in any case. Foley checked himself into a overnight alcohol treatment facility. Well, it wasn't really overnight, but it was one of those miracle cures that Republicans seem to find everywhere they turn. It's a miracle. I'm cured in only 3 days.
He continues to offer no excuse whatsoever for his conduct. He just says, the priest made me do it. And he's no charges are going to be expected, they say here, because they can't prove that any sex happened. Just Hotmail, if you'll pardon it, Hotmail went down. Now, a comedian, you got to love this. We got a comedian who's saying the Pope is going to go to hell, and she's facing jail. Her name is Sabina Guzzanti, and she's an Italian satirist. And at a rally in July, the rally was against Pope Benedict, who is also Joseph Ratzinger. She said, in 20 years, Ratzinger will be dead and will end up in hell, tormented by queer demons, not the passive ones, but the very active ones. Now, from this, the Italian prosecutors are asking the Justice Ministry to indict her under a 1929 treaty with the Vatican that makes the Pope a sacred and inviolable person. Inviolable, to not violate, I would, inviolable, sacred, and you cannot say anything like that about the Pope. The law also punishes insults to him with up to 5 years in jail. Now, wouldn't that be wonderful? I don't care if you know what you head up. Nobody deserves that kind of hands-off treatment. If you weren't infallible, you would have never said that it's the gays and lesbians who are preventing world peace. But that's a whole nother story that we covered on a whole nother day. Speaking of Charlie Crist, which we weren't, he says he's not going to campaign for the anti-marriage amendment in Florida, but he's definitely going to vote for it. He's saying that he's going to spend his next few weeks promoting Senator McCain. He says, I'll support it, but I'm not going to campaign. It's not a top tier for me. That's our Gavener, by the way. The one-sentence amendment in Florida says, marriage is between one man and one woman, only one, and bars any legal union that is equivalent to marriage, no matter what you say. Amazing stuff here. Speaking of Palin, which we weren't, wonderful article I came across today pointing out the parallels to the 2000 recount in Florida when the votes were not counted to what's going on with Palin and her and the probe that's taking place in Alaska. Republicans, of course, are doing their very best to derail the abuse of power investigation against Governor Palin. It's Sarah Palin. By the way, one of our chatters referred to Sarah Palin as Mussolini in the chat room earlier. Just perfect. Mussolini. Couldn't have been better. He was the vice presidential candidate, as we all know. And there, the Republican Party, the article points out, is taking place many of the same methods employed in shutting down the 2000 presidential election in Florida are taking place now in Alaska. So in Florida in 2000, the playbook included lawsuits and the exercise of power by state officials and appeals to the court of opinion, the public court of opinion, and an operation that was directed by out-of-state Republicans. All that happened in Florida. It's happening again. It's the same game plan. Of course, Palin said earlier, hold me accountable when the Republican legislature launched the investigation. That was back in mid-August. But now she's changed her mind and wants it handled in front of an employment board here in Alaska. In any case, it's a group of three or four people that she basically appointed and knows that they're going to brush it aside. Carl Rove written all over it. Same methods that were used in part. I'm surprised we didn't see what's his name with a gay mustache up there in Alaska. He looks kind of moose-ish. There's a lawsuit that shows the rift that took place between gays and blacks at the DNC. Now, of course, the LGBT community favors the Democratic Party, and the Democratic platform commits the party to a full inclusion of GLBT families in the life of the country, even though it's not officially advertised or oftentimes seems to be falling on the wayside. Nonetheless, that's what they say. And, of course, the Republicans, one man and one woman. But there is an increasingly nasty lawsuit against the DNC that was brought about by Donald Hitchcock after he was fired as the party's gay and lesbian outreach director. And it has exposed a huge rift between gays and another of the party's important constituencies, African Americans. And Howard Dean describes it as a rift in his deposition in the lawsuit, a portion of which was posted on YouTube, and it's causing more than just a little political upset as the party prepares to nominate Barack Obama. Now, in the video, Dean describes how he tried to be a peacemaker between the gays and the lesbians and the prominent African-American leaders. And he was led by a one-time Gore campaign manager. Her name is Donna Brazil. And they've been objecting to goals and timetables for the gays and lesbians and delegates. This goes back to the convention, but nonetheless, it was a huge problem. I wanted equal representation for gays and lesbians in America, and I wanted to achieve it in a way that wasn't offensive to the history of the civil rights movement. Lord have mercy. So now we're offensive to the civil rights movement. So Dean said that in a deposition, which was videotaped, but it was only made public a week ago, or a couple weeks ago. And Hitchcock lawsuit, it's bad enough politically for the DNC, but it's taken another turn for the worse. The DNC, at least in terms of publicity during the election season, was a bad time for negotiations to collapse between those who thought that we were an affront to the civil rights movement. Hitchcock was fired by the DNC back in 06 when his partner sent an open letter to the gay Democrats criticizing Dean. Lord, it almost sounds Republican-esque there, doesn't it? Let's move over to California and talk about you remember the young man who was shot dead in the elementary school, or was it a junior high school in California? McLenry, I believe is how you pronounce his name. He's the 14-year-old boy who's accused of killing the 8th grader, Larry King. He pleaded not guilty Thursday to premeditated murder and a hate crime. His attorney says that pleading guilty could mean dying in prison unless the youth can be tried on lesser charges of manslaughter. His attorney said this is essentially a death sentence. And by the way, the LGBT organizations in California did step up and say that that probably we should not seek the death penalty against someone that young for what he did. But in any case, convicted of manslaughter, he would face a sentence of 6 to 21 years. The murder and the hate crime charges put together, he now faces a required minimum of 51 years and a maximum of life with no time off for good behavior. The prosecutors really haven't elaborated very much on the hate crime charge, but if you recall, the young man who was murdered wore makeup and jewelry, and it wasn't a secret that he was gay. And in fact, he had a Valentine's card for the little boy who shot him. Well, the Superior Court judge asked him if he understood his rights in court when he made the plea, and he said, yes, sir, in a strong voice. Larry's mother, Larry King, the little boy who was killed, was visibly upset as she watched her son inside the prison's holding area, watched her son's killer, marched in and out of the courtrooms. And she points out that her son is dead, and he can't ever come back. And I think she is interested in the death penalty. You know, it's a hell of a note when, you know, kids don't grow up hating that way. That's something that's learned. Absolutely, that's something that's learned in this society. Teaching people to hate the other. Speaking of hate, we have an audio clip here. This is the audio clip, Bob, that it's called Kansas Gay Bashing. I'll tell you a little bit about the story. The young man was asleep in his home, and it happened in a Kansas town, a little town called Greeley, in Greeley, and it's actually happening in Greeley County, here we go, in a little town called Tribune. The population of the town is 800 people, and everyone knows each other, and so if you can imagine, the crime rate is pretty low. So when a 16-year-old boy was beaten inside his home, there was a lot of stir in the community. And this happened early Sunday morning. A 16-year-old broke into the home of the other 16-year-old boy because he had heard that the boy was gay. And he severely beat him in his home and then fled the scene. In addition to that, the boy who broke into the house to beat up the gay child brought along with him a small explosive device intending to kill the student. Time and time again, we always find out that these murders are always overkill. Annihilation is the goal. You can't just kill. You've got to completely eliminate them from the face of the earth. It's some sort of internal thing, but in any case, he brought a small explosive device intended to kill the student. I don't have an idea what that is. What the device was has not been released. The school is in shock, and the suspect is not being identified because of his age. Bob, roll the audio. This is some edited audio from the television station up there in the Tribune, Kansas.
A small Kansas town is shaken tonight after the beating of a teenager. The alleged motive was that the teen was gay. The teen is now recovering from severe wounds as his classmate faces charges of attempted murder. It's all happening in the town of Tribune in Greeley County, where KSN's Asia Vickers is for us tonight.
Tribune, Kansas. Population, about 800. It's a town where everyone knows each other, and the crime rate is low. So when a 16-year-old was beaten in his own home, it made a big impact.
It has taken the town by surprise.
The town and Greeley County High School, where the alleged suspect and victim went to school. Authorities say the beating happened early Sunday when the 16-year-old suspect broke into the home of another student. The sheriff says the suspect apparently thought his classmate was gay and severely beat him. What's worse, authorities allege the suspect brought a small explosive device with the intent to kill. The suspect, who were not identifying because of his age, was arrested a short time later at his home in Horace. In the wake of such a crime, the school says it's doing all it can to ensure this doesn't happen again. The accused is charged with attempted murder, aggravated burglary, aggravated assault, and carrying a concealed explosive. His detention hearing is tomorrow at 4:30 Mountain Time.
If it were any other situation, he'd be called a terrorist, would he not? Yes, he would. And by the way, the boy's family, the family of the child that was beaten, is screaming as loudly as they can, "He's not gay!" But what are you going to say in Kansas in a town of 800 people? But say, "He's not gay." I'm sure that the kid wasn't out to his parents, but apparently there were stories going on about him in school. And the other 16-year-old felt perfectly comfortable breaking into his home while the boy slept and attempted to beat him to death. For whatever reason, he got away without using the explosive. And the family is screaming, "He's not gay." even if he's not gay, he was perceived to be gay, which is what the problem is in this country. You don't have to be LGBT to be perceived that way. And pretty nasty. By the way, a Colorado judge has proved to be unsympathetic to transgender panic in his courtroom. I thought this was a wonderful step forward. It was, the homosexual panic thing for so many years. He tried. He touched me. Oh, well, then it's okay. I'm glad you killed and got rid of another one. In any case, the judge upheld a first-degree murder charge against a man accused in the July 16 bludgeoning death of an 18-year-old transgendered woman. Now, his name is Alan Ray Andrade, and he's 31, and he faces various felony charges in the 18-year-old transgendered woman's death. And he claims that he was seduced and all the standard arguments. And he killed Zapata because she smiled at him and said, "I'm all woman," after he discovered male genitalia. The judge said, at best, this is just a case about passion. In any case, the boy who murdered the boy, he's 31 years old, who murdered the 18-year-old transgendered student and telephone calls that have been recorded from prison and jail. He and his girlfriend show a huge anti-gay bias and they just say, "Oh, we made a mistake. All gay things need to die. All gay things need to die," he said. "No use crying over spilt milk," he said. Now, the transgendered woman's sister found her body in the apartment in Greeley, Colorado, about 50 miles northeast of Denver, and apparently the two had met through a social networking site in July and had engaged in oral sex. The next day, the 31-year-old was looking at photographs in the apartment and became suspicious, confronted the woman, and soon beat her unconscious with a fire extinguisher and left her to die after grabbing her crotch and discovering male genitalia. He took her car, took her purse, took her keys, and was arrested as he tried to flee. Man, I could do a story like that 5 days a week. There's always something like that going on. By the way, the Arabs, although they're not denouncing the fatwa against LGBT folks and just go out and kill them, they're no good, that doesn't seem to be much of a controversy. But now, I tell you, now they're up in arms because Arabs of all ideological spectrums and thoughts are very upset that a Saudi cleric has said that it is now permissible to kill the owners of satellite TV stations that show immoral content. "Yes, it's all right to kill people, but it's certainly not all right to kill my television show. Damn it." Many Arabs are expressing worry about the recent comment by the Muslim leader, the cleric, saying it's going to fuel terrorism and encourage attacks on station employees and owners of stations. The edict, or the fatwa, has also focused the spotlight on Saudi Arabia's legal system, because the system is run by Islamic cleric judges. God, it's better to be here, as bad as it is. But if the Republicans have their way, it'll be just like this there, here, either way you look at it. The Islamic cleric judges are all hardliners, and they've been increasingly criticized by the Saudis because of these fatwas. But boy, taking it out on the TV stations. You can kill the owners of the satellite TV stations if they show immoral television programming. A little quick story here before we start with Larry Sanders. James Inhofe, he's up for re-election this year over in Oklahoma. and he's running an ad series. It's attack ads that contain gay overtones. It shows gay overtones. If you've seen it, it's got gay written all over it. In any case, the beginning of it is a wedding cake with two plastic grooms on top, and then it shows a photograph of his Democratic opponent, and it shows the opponent is a young man with curly hair wearing a leather jacket saying, Inhofe office said, we do not hire openly gay staffers due to the possibility of conflicts. And he normally stands in front of a photograph of his family in these photo ops. And he declares that in the recorded history of our family, we've never had a divorce or any kind of homosexual relationship. Well, you're just dumb as a board. Why would anybody speak up and say that they were LGBT in your family? Why indeed? Got a couple of seconds to tell you the story about Brokeback Mountain. It's by the author. Annie Perlow was interviewed recently about her writing Brokeback Mountain. And she says, Brokeback Mountain has had little effect on my writing life, but it is a source of constant irritation in my private life. She says, there are countless people who rewrite the story, and they write it in with all their fantasies, and they do it to correct what they see as a disappointing story, and that she, being a straight woman, got it wrong. So they constantly send her gross manuscripts and porn style because they're trying to fix it. And most of the fix-it people are men, and most of these fix-it people are just don't like it because a woman wrote such a beautiful, beautiful story. So I'll stop with that one for this evening. In any case, we're going to head on over to the Paradise Dance Hall. The DJ this evening is the incomparable and dangerous and yet lovable DJ, Mr. Larry Sanders. You can find out more about Larry Sanders over at MorningstarMelody.com. That's MorningstarMelody.com. And so as we gather up our umbrellas and our pocketbooks and our raincoats, we'll wander on over to the Paradise Dance Hall with Larry Sanders.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.
Fabulous mix by Mr. Larry Sanders, the world's most dangerous yet somehow lovable DJ. You can find out more about Larry at morningstarmelody.com. By the way, this is a good chance to tell everybody as later. I'm going to be leaving October the 1st. I'll be gone a week. I'll be gone from Wednesday, October 1st through Wednesday, October the 8th. Some have asked me why I'm going to San Francisco, and I have told them it's the Muslims must visit Mecca, and gay guys have to go to San Francisco at least once in their lives and go to the corner of Castro and 18th, which is no less than the gayest four corners on the planet. So I shall indeed make my pilgrimage to Castro and 8th there in the Castro district. Actually, I'm not going just for that. That's just a nice bonus. I'm actually going to spend a week with Larry. I'm going to meet the world's most fabulous DJ. We've been in close contact since Larry was on the show. Larry was on the show earlier in the year. You remember he helped us out with the Christmas music. That was such a hit that evening, a wonderful Christmas mix. That was just fabulous. So anyway, I'm going to be going to California and visiting with Larry, and delightful man and absolutely stunning DJ. I need to tell you that although there is no horn section this evening, we don't normally do one on Saturday, the programming for the Head On Radio Network is not over. Rick Smith's show will start around 5:30 or so Saturday evening, followed by Rick's Place, the horn psychiatrist, Rick Goodner. He begins at 7 p.m. on Saturday, and Lord knows the horn psychiatrist is a valued member of the horn stable. I'm getting to like that word. We're a stable. In any case, Billy Shears will also be bringing us Night Sounds at 9 p.m. On Saturday evening. So the chat room is open and running during those segments, and we'd love to have you join us. Saturday evening is very different than the normal programming there. Normal is probably the very wrong word to use. The weekday programming. We have a different cast of strange people that come in on Saturday. And that's always great fun. And, of course, if you happen to can't be there at those times, those three programs, I believe, loop through the weekend so you can catch one of the most anytime you happen to tune in on the weekend. Want to chat? Thank our chat moderators and our news ninjas, the most dedicated and wonderful people on the planet who keep us posted with constant truth, and they are always in pursuit of it. Very nice to be back with you this weekend. You've been listening to the Head On Radio Network. This is strictly confidential LGBT conversation radio, and here's Cynthia Manley to close us out.